the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. I would guess that something you're probably not thinking about too much, we only have 3 more months left in the year, and that means only 3 more months left for tax planning. And after December 31st, you have fewer choices. Taxes have gone up over the past few years. The brackets have been moving, the phase out of deductions and exemptions, and of course, the Obamacare penalties, which are going to be substantial this year. If you don't happen to have insurance, you're going to find a big impact there. I think people are going to be surprised. So for this program, we're going to focus on a very critical topic for the rest of the year, looking at your taxes and how you can lower them.
Imagine that. Believe it or not, folks, it's still possible, but we're getting into that critical period of time. If you are an employee working for a company, there are certain things that you can do. For example, if you have a pension plan, a 401k plan, and especially, by the way, folks, if you are over the age of 50, there's a bonus contribution. We'll talk about that when we get to pension plans. But John, I think that one of the things that we ought to do right off the bat is just talk about tax brackets, because most people don't understand what that tax bracket means. And let me give you an example of how that's going to impact you. Depending on your income, any additional dollars of income that you get this year are going to be taxed at that marginal tax bracket. So let's say this year you got a new job, you're making more money, or at work you got a salary increase, you got promoted, or for a lot of you, maybe you get a year-end bonus, which, you know, hate to say it, that year-end bonus is going to be taxed at your highest marginal tax bracket, and in some cases may move you into a higher tax bracket, and in other cases, if it's big enough, may start to phase out your itemized deductions and your exemptions and may subject you to an additional 3.8% Obama tax. So there's a lot of stuff that happens here, John, and I think most people just aren't thinking that way when they get a raise. Let's say you're having a certain amount of income withheld from your paycheck. Let's say you get a promotion or a substantial raise. You may not have enough money being held from your paycheck, and you may end up owing money when it comes to April 15th. And one of the big shocks that I find, John, is that based on income, people forget they can lose their itemized deductions or have them phased out or their exemptions. And they're not thinking of that. They're thinking, okay, I made $100,000, my deductions, or let's say they made $200,000 if you're single, or $250,000, and they're thinking my deductions are $50,000. It may not be $50,000. You may lose some of those deductions in addition to paying an additional tax of 3.8% on your income.
What you're actually making here, Jim, is a case for radical income tax reform, because in reality, you can't blame a lot of people. The thing is so complex to start with, and then it's constantly changing. And who's got time to keep up with a lot of that stuff? But let's see if we can decipher some of this. Let's list the tax brackets. This is the way our system exists and how these affect taxes.
Right now, we have about 7 tax brackets. They're 10, 15, 25, 28, 33, 35, and 39.6. I mean, if you're listening to the show, I'm assuming you're probably in the upper tax brackets, but let's start with the 25% bracket. If you are single and you make $37,650, you're in a 25% bracket. If you're single and you make over $91,150, you go up to a 28% bracket. And if you're single, $190,000 puts you in the 33, and then $413,000 puts you in the 35. I love this one. And you make $2,000 more. So if you go from 413 to 415, you move up almost 5 full percentage points. And this is really key. I mean, that's an extra 5% of your income. If you're married, the 25% bracket starts at $75,000. $151,900 for the 28% bracket, 231,000. At the 33%, 413,000. At the 35%, and then the 39.6 jumps to almost 467,000. They really hammer single individuals, and you may be one of those individuals. Let's say you were married, you got divorced, and this year you'll be filing as a single taxpayer. Beware, you could get walloped, and especially if you're in the upper income levels. As I mentioned, it only takes $2,000 of additional income to move from a 35% bracket almost to a 40% bracket if you're single. The standard deduction this year is about $9,300, but as a result of income, if you are single and you make $259,400, they start to phase out your itemized deductions. If you're married, $311,300, they start to phase out your itemized deductions. We'll get into this when we talk about your income tax form, because there's something on the front page, on the bottom of your tax return, on the front page, it's called adjusted gross income. And if you exceed those levels of income, 259 single, 311 married, they take 3% of your adjusted gross income and subtract it from your itemized deductions, and also begin to phase out your exemptions. And, you know, that could be quite costly for individuals because, you know, if you have children, three or four children, you know, that could really start making a difference. It all adds up.
You know, you just triggered a thought in my head here, because we covered divorce last week, remember, on the program, and the unanticipated financial ramifications of that. Sometimes people think in a divorce, everything gets split in two and everything goes on, but it really doesn't quite work like that. In the case of taxes, however, you just triggered this thought. Before, maybe they were filing as a couple, you know, filing a joint return, but then they go to single returns again, and that has ramifications in and of itself.
Yeah, if you have gone through a divorce and you have children, it's really critical as a single individual to get that head of household. It might be something you use in negotiation because, for example, if you are single, you're in a 25% bracket at $37,650. If you're head of household, it jumps to $50,400. The 28% bracket begins at $91,000. If you're single, it jumps to $130,000. If you're head of household, the 33% bracket is $190,000. It's $211,000 if you're head of household, and the 35%, well, they're the same once you get into the upper tax brackets. So between the 25% and 35% bracket, there is a major significant savings if you can get that head of household designation, because I have had to counsel clients who got walloped. We just had a client that came to us recently, she having gone through a divorce, and she was just surprised at what happened to her tax bracket. And, you know, fortunately, I told her, I said, you know, at least you're going to be head of household because you have the kids, and that's going to save you some money, but you are jumping into a higher tax bracket.
You know, one of the things that we've known for a long time is that the tax code actually discriminates against married couples who are filing as such rather than against, say, unmarried single people because of the way it's handled. But if we look at phase out of deductions, right now the deductions begin to phase out if you make over 259,000 single, but only 311,000 if you're married. In other words, it's not the double of that. It's less than that. That's where your deductions start to phase out. Now, what about Obamacare tax?
200,000, you start adding the 3.8% additional tax on investment income, 250 if you're married, and then also you are subject to an additional 0.9% Medicare tax, because if you make over the 118,000 that is subject to Social Security tax, you're subject to the 2.9% Medicare tax, and then if you exceed those levels, they add another 0.9%, so you can hit an additional 3.8% tax. So, John, if you take a look at the top tax bracket is 39.6. Phasing out your itemized deductions and exemptions adds another 1%. And then the Medicare tax of 3.8%. So the total tax, marginal tax rate, is 44.4%. Throw in states like California, And, you know, you could be in the 57% bracket.
And believe it or not, they keep talking about more taxes. We hear about carbon tax because that's not directly related to income tax. But Mrs. Clinton wants to take it, what is it, over 50% on surcharges or something like that? Whatever it is, the bottom line always seems to come down to more tax.
Well, they're always looking for taxes. I can't think of politicians that don't. I don't care if it's at the state level, the municipal level, or now at the federal level. They're always looking for more money because they're running big deficits and they're promising more goodies. The key thing here is you really need to know what that marginal tax bracket is because it impacts everything that you do. Any additional dollars you bring in, whether it's from investments, it's a bonus, it's a raise, it's a job promotion, it's going to be taxed at that higher bracket. And you really need to understand that and make a provision for it because you don't want to have a surprise when you go into your accountant April 15th and he says, oh, by the way, you owe more money.
Yeah, but it would seem like if we go back to Obamacare, everybody's subject to it, right?
You have to have health insurance. And if you don't, let's say you're self-employed, you don't have health insurance, you're single and you're working, you're not participating in an insurance plan, you have to have insurance. And you have to buy it from Obamacare, which is very, very expensive, which is why a lot of people are just saying, you know what, I'll just pay the tax. Because, you know, the premiums could be $5,000 or $6,000 along with deductibles that are very high. But if you are single and an adult, and you don't have health insurance, you owe a $695 tax. And this is going to catch a lot of millennials come 2017 when they file their tax return. If you have children, it's $347.50 per child, $695 per adult, with a maximum tax of $2,085 per family. So just bear in mind, if you're young, you're single, you don't have health insurance, or you're a young couple, don't have health insurance, if you don't buy it from the government, they're going to assess you a tax that you'll have to come up with on April 15th. And that will get indexed to inflation each year.
Well, it is always still legal to try to avoid taxes, and given these high tax rates as a result of Obamacare, which are just going to continue rising, and the changes that came about as a result of the tax bill back in 2012, what are those strategies that you can use?
There's a number of strategies, but in this show, I'm only going to focus on the front page of your tax return. For those of us in the planning industry, we talk about deductions above the line and deductions below the line. And basically, they're talking about the front page and the back page of your tax return. Above the line is the front page. And the key figure that you really need to know is the bottom of your front page of your tax return. It's an item they call adjusted gross income. And the reason that that number is important, depending on your income level, if you're working or self-employed, or you just happen to have a lot of investment income, depending on your level of income, they start taking 3% of that to phase out your deductions and your exemptions. Or if, let's say, you're retired and you have a high level of income, they now add a 3.8% investment tax on all your investment income. I don't care if it's from annuities, if it's from things like rent, dividends, stocks, interest, capital gains, whatever the source of your investment income, you now are going to pay an additional 3.8%. And depending on your income bracket, you could be moving from a 15% tax on capital gains and dividends to a 23.8% tax. So it's almost an additional 10% tax on your investment income.
Well, it would seem like the goal here would be to lower your adjusted gross income, which is what the basis is for your tax payments. But how do you do that? I've actually heard one guy say, I can't afford to make more money. It'll put me into a bigger tax bracket. And that's an interesting statement, isn't it? I don't want to make more money because I'll lose it in taxes.
Well, I mean, it's basically boiled down to three ways that you can lower your taxes: tax-free, tax-sheltered, or tax deferred. And all of those impact the front page of your tax return. For example, line 8 on the front page of your tax return is tax exempt interest. You can exclude that from taxation. Also, anything that is tax sheltered reduces the amount that's reported. There's tax sheltered dividends. There's tax sheltered things like real estate where you have rent on a rental property where you can shelter part of your income with depreciation deductions. That would be tax sheltered. And then tax deferred are things like pension plans, IRAs, 401k plans, all those kind of things come off the front page of your tax return.
Maybe you could do some detailing of those. It's, you know, when you just say that this is what's happening, show me what that means.
Well, let's take a couple things. Tax-free. I mean, the obvious one that everybody's aware of are tax-free bonds. You buy a tax-free bond, and especially if you're in a state with high state income taxes like California, which go all the way up to 13.3%. If you're in one of those brackets in California, you could be in over a 57% tax bracket. Another way to get tax-free income is something that people don't think about are Roth IRAs. Money that you put into a Roth, if left there for 5 years, when you take it out, it's all tax-free. So there's two ways that you can get tax-free income, municipal bonds and Roths, and the contributions that you can make to a Roth are $5,500. But that could be phased out based on your income. But another way to get around that is if you are self-employed and you have a 401k program, you're just in a high tax bracket anyway. Why not put $23,000 a year into a Roth IRA? And if you have it there for 5 years or 10 years, 15 years, think of how much that would accumulate to tax-free. So anything you pull out, earnings, capital gains, whatever it is, it's tax-free. The next item is tax sheltered, and things that are obvious there, you can have things like oil and gas income that is sheltered, real estate rentals, certain kind of REITs. There's things like master limited partnerships where you can shelter 60 to 70% of your income from taxation. And believe it or not, annuities, especially if you annuitize an annuity, part of that income, a good portion of it, 70-80%, is considered return of principal. So it's another way that you can shelter. It's one of the reasons why immediate annuities are being used more frequently now to make up for lower investment returns or lack of capital in the retirement market. So there's basically three or four ways that you can get tax shelter: real estate, REITs, master limited partnerships, and annuities. Tax deferral, obviously, annuities, you can put money in an annuity and it compounds tax deferred. The same thing with the pension plan. You put money in a pension, whether it's your IRA, it's your 401k at work, or any kind of pension plan, and you can basically have that income deferred until you take it out when you retire, let's say after age 59 and a half, or mandatorily once you reach age 70 and a half. So there's three basic ways, and you want to focus on those three because they're going to reduce that bottom line number, adjusted gross income, on the front page of your tax return. So most tax planning today is basically focusing on above line deductions because they're really moving towards phasing out itemized deductions and exemptions for what they define as upper income people.
So I guess if I summarize all of this you're describing here, what you're really trying to do is reduce the amount of income you have on the front page of your tax return, because it really has an impact on the back page where all of the tax is actually calculated.
Yeah, exactly. Because the more that you can reduce your adjusted gross income on the front page, it's going to save you on itemized deductions, it's going to save you on exemptions, and it's going to save you on all those Obamacare taxes that come in, whether you're paying an additional 3.8% on investment income or you're paying 3.8% on Medicare taxes. So there's a number of reasons why you want to do it. That's why the effective strategies focus basically on above line tax planning, because for most people, that's essentially what is left. I mean, we all get itemized deductions like a mortgage interest, the taxes you pay to the state if you have to pay income taxes. Medical deductions are less so today because after Obamacare, you used to be able to deduct anything over 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. But after Obamacare, your medical expenses have to exceed 10%. And that affects a lot of older people, older retirees, especially if one of them is in a retirement home where you have a lot of medical expenses based on your income. You could lose part of those if your income exceeds a certain level.
So what you're saying here is you really have to focus on three areas. Number one would be tax-free things. Number two, tax-sheltered. And three, tax-deferred. So let us focus on pensions, because they are tax-deferred instruments.
You know, depending on whether you're employed or you're an employee, I'm just going to go through some of the basic type of pension plans out there. Everybody has a 401k. If you're working in the public corporation, private sector, if you're in government, let's say if you're at state, you may have a 403b or you may have a 457 for government. The limit this year is 18,000. And here's one that it's called a catch-up provision. If you are age 50, you get an additional $6,000. So you can put $23,000. Now, here's a great one, because we're using this for one of our clients. I'm not going to discuss the case study today, but a defined benefit pension plan, which is what a lot of state and federal workers get. The maximum benefit that you can fund for is $210,000. And depending on your age, the amount that you can put away, I think, will floor you. Obviously, the older you are, and especially now with a low income environment, you can put away more money. Now, let me give you an example. Let's assume you're age 50. You want to retire at age 65, and you want a $210,000 a year pension. Well, at age 50, at a 4% rate of return, you get to fund $5,250,000 is what you would need to fund for to get that benefit at age 65. That means you could probably put $262,000 a year off your tax return and get a deduction for it. At a 3% rate of return, you would need to fund for $7 million at age 65. That's what would produce $210,000. You can fund almost $376,000 a year. And so if you are self-employed, you know, you're an athlete, you're a movie star, or you're self-employed like a consultant, and you're getting closer to retirement, and you're fortunate enough to get into those higher income levels, I tell you, it works beautifully. We have a client right now that's in their 60s, and he's basically a consultant. He does a lot of web-based computer type consulting for corporations, and a couple of them are major corporations. He's putting away right now, because he's in his 60s, he wants to retire at age 70, he's putting away $400,000 a year exempt from federal taxes and state taxes. And living in California, that makes a world of difference, because he's in a 57% tax bracket. So if you take a look at, you know, funding $400,000 a year, I mean, he's almost saving, what, over 200 and something is just in tax savings alone. So really, his contribution of $400,000 really isn't $400,000. It's probably only $150,000, because the rest is coming from tax savings, both at the state level and the federal level.
Well, let's assume you're not Larry Lots of Bucks. Is there something people who make less income can actually employ?
Yeah, there's things like SEP IRAs, defined contribution plans, profit sharing plans, and the limit on that this year is $53,000. If you're, let's say, more modest and you can only put away a certain amount depending on your income, you can put $5,500 into an IRA. And if you're over age 50, you can add an additional $1,000, so $6,500. Simple plans, you can put $12,500 and a catch-up provision of $3,000, so it'd be $15,500. Now, I want to take some time and explain this, the difference in why tax savings really make a difference. Let's take somebody that's putting $18,000 a year into a 401k plan. If you're in a 30% bracket, you save $5,400. If you're in a 40% bracket, you save $7,200. And obviously, in a 50% bracket, you save $9,000. If you put away the maximum of $23,000 in a 30% bracket, you're saving $6,900. $9,200 in a 40% bracket, $11,500. If you're in a 50% bracket. So you can see, basically, a good portion of the contribution you make, you're getting back in the form of tax savings. So it really doesn't cost you as much as the dollar figure you're looking at.
You know, and it's not just tax savings, Jim, too, because some companies do matching contributions, at least in one form or another. They may do one-on-one, or it's obviously varying from company to company, but this has further implications which are beneficial.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of companies will do matching contributions up to 6% of your salary or up to the limit under law. In other words, they could do matching contributions. And let's say you put $10,000 into your 401k, they match you $10,000. Well, you know, automatically you get 100% rate of return on your money. And then you add the tax savings of 30% or 40% or 50%. John, you could have 130 all the way to 150% benefit for every dollar you put in. So imagine if you combine employer contributions plus the tax savings, it is a great way to build up wealth very quickly. You really double the effectiveness of the contribution through tax savings and employer contributions.
So the lessons learned here from today's program are, first of all, as far as reducing taxes that you should be doing, there is still time to do it. Some tax planning for the end of the year. You should focus on things which are tax-free, tax-sheltered, tax-deferred. All of this is what we call above-the-line tax planning, meaning the tax basis upon which the tax is actually calculated prior to deductions and exemptions and things of that nature. If you're above a 30% tax bracket, probably wise to invest in stocks, which are taxed at 15% versus, say, for example, interest, which can be taxed as high as 57%. Now, that's an overall figure, assuming you're living in California. That includes federal and state. Obviously, your state tax will be a little different. And depending on your condition, there are other things such as master limited partnerships, real estate, tax-free bonds, things of that nature, and pensions. These are all ways to reduce taxes. And one of the key ways of doing this is speaking with your tax accountant and investment advisor. And I should point out, coming up tomorrow on the program, our guest is going to be Lowell Smith from Irologix, and the subject will be pensions and what all the implications of a pension for retirement happen to be. So the big issue, of course, Jim, is planning.
And that's right. And remember, folks, you've got basically a little over 3 months left to get that planning in. And if you're self-employed, you really want to see your advisor around this time, especially if you plan to set up a pension plan. As long as you get the pension plan set up, you have till April 15th or even longer, October 15th, to fund that pension. So it's not too late to plan, but really take this seriously. You need to do something now. Don't wait to the last minute in December. Accountants are busy. Advisors are busy. There's so much going on with the holidays. Don't wait to the last minute. And especially if you think you're going to be, number one, you got a raise this year. Number two, you think you're going to get a promotion. Or number three, you think you're going to get, let's say, a bonus at the company you work. So you really want to plan for that.
And it is time for our case study, which we do every week here on Lifetime Income. These case studies are real. They involve real people. We've changed their names to protect their privacy. And this week, what are we doing?
This week, we're going to be talking about Tom and Kathleen Sumac. Tom is 68. Kathleen is 60. Both of them are now retired. Tom's life expectancy, 86. Kathleen's is 93. There's that difference, once again, between men and women. Risk tolerance, fairly conservative for both of them now that they're retired. Investment objective, income and preservation of capital. Tom is age 68. He's a retired chemical engineer. He retired earlier this year after working almost 40 years with the same company. He has been very active in managing his finances, and he wanted to make sure they retire debt-free and can enjoy the next chapter in life. He wants to focus on travel and spend more time out on the water in his sailboat, a guy after my own heart. Kathleen, age 60, she's a retired nurse. She's basically looking forward to spending more time with her husband. She's very active and looks forward to pursuing her passions and having more time to relax with family and friends. What was both important to Tom and Kathleen was making the best choices with their pensions. They wanted to manage their taxes. They wanted to maximize their retirement income and relocation in retirement. So those were sort of the key differences here. Now, if we look at their current budget, $50,000 a year for essentials, discretionary $20,000, so $70,000. When he was working, salary was $95,000, and he had surplus income of $25,000. However, now he's retired. Discretionary income goes up $10,000. That's the travel, folks. So now budget is $80,000. And this is something that I think surprises a lot of people. When they retire, sometimes their expenses go up because you've got more free time. You got more time to do things, to do travel, to take more trips and longer trips. So their discretionary budget increased by $10,000. Pension in Social Security was $82,800. Surplus was $2,800. And that was before we got to their assets, their home, valued at $380,000. Their joint accounts were $411,000. Tom's pension with this company, $673,000. Kathleen's pension was $265,000 with her company. So total investment assets of $1,349,000. Total assets, $1,007,000, liability, $70,000. So roughly about a $1.7 million net worth.
Jim, I wanted to point out too, for those people listening to the podcast, we do have the case study online so that you can follow this entire case with the numbers. It's right before you. It's really hard to follow numbers sometimes when they're just given verbally. So that is available along with the podcast. What were their main concerns anyway? I mean, just listening to you right now, it sounds like their expenses were in line.
Their main thing was managing their pensions, because based on the decisions that they had to make would make a big difference in terms of their surplus income and actually allow them to do even more travel. I mean, they're just conservative people, so they put an extra $10,000 for travel. And of course, in the back of their mind is, oh, goodness, we got more income. It would be great if we could actually do more travel. So managing their pensions, managing their taxes like anybody when they retire. And also they wanted to create a legacy for their kids. So basically what we did is we took a single life option on Kathleen's pension because of her longer life. Remember, she was 8 years younger than her husband. And also basically women live longer. And for Tom's pension, he took a 50% survivor and did a lump sum rollover for his smaller pension. He had two of them. So in managing taxes, we rolled over a lump sum to reduce the tax liability. And then we also created a municipal bond portfolio to produce tax-free income. So basically, we wanted to manage both pensions and produce as much income as we can, because, you know, with longevity of 86 to 93, there's a good possibility down the road there's more medical expenses. And there's also the possibility that, you know, one of them could end up in a retirement home. That's a real big risk when both spouses are alive. So basically, by taking the best option for Kathleen, her pension income would be $10,800. Tom's two pensions would be $32,000. Kathleen and Tom's Social Security, $40,000. The tax-free bonds would produce $10,000 of income. And then from Tom and Kathleen's retirement accounts, there would be an additional $28,000. So total investment income, $39,000. Grand total, $122,000. Their budget of $80,000 left them a surplus of $42,000. So obviously, you know, they were going to be able to travel. That was the good news, because they really did want to travel and take some trips. And, you know, the good thing right now is with the dollar being stronger against the euro and even some of the Asian currencies, you can travel today and your money buys you a lot more on trips. But anybody going to Europe for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or going to Asia or Australia, I don't need to tell you, by the time you add hotel, rooms, accommodation, plane fare, those numbers can add up. And I told them $20,000-$25,000 was probably a more realistic budget for travel.
You know, as I look back, Jim, over the year and where we're headed, I really think that a lot of people don't understand what's happening with the taxes. Some of these things have been geared to go into effect after the election, you know, so that it won't affect the election because people won't be looking at their tax bill. But things, they are changing, and a number of people are going to be quite surprised.
Indeed, they are. I mean, $695 or a little almost $2,100 for a family, it starts to add up, John. And, you know, a lot of things happen, too, at the end of the year. If you're investing and you have mutual funds, a lot of times, November and December, mutual funds are required to report any capital gains, short or long, that they've taken or dividends they distribute. So that's a kind of gotcha thing that sometimes happens in November, December. You get maybe a bonus at work that's extra income. And, you know, maybe between both a husband and wife, someone got a raise, or maybe you both got a raise, or one of you got a bonus, and something happens, and all of a sudden you're put into that higher tax bracket. So it's really not too late to plan for this. And more importantly, if you're self-employed, do yourself a favor. If you don't have a pension plan, and I have bad news for you, if you are in the state of California, the governor is about ready to pass a bill in the state of California at the end of this month that if you are self-employed with 15 or more employees, you are going to be required to take up from 3-5% of your employees' wages and put it in a state pension fund that eventually could be raised up to 10%. Yeah, we're going to do a whole show on pensions because there is a crisis coming. And one of the ways that they're thinking of solving this crisis for states and municipalities is tapping the private pension market and going after individuals that don't have pension plans, forcing them to contribute to these state plans. It's just another way to relieve the financial stress for municipal and state governments. So once again, if you're very fortunate to be in the upper income levels, start planning now, and especially if you're self-employed. Well, that pretty much sums up today's program, where our theme was how to lower taxes, save money, and invest more. And I hope you realize now the importance of doing some tax planning and contributing to a pension plan. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here for Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.